Arjuna Ardab with us. We talk about his book, Radical Brilliance. We're going to get your calls going when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with Arjuna Ardab, the book, Radical Brilliance, talking about how to be a little more brilliant, creative, and it also enhances, I think, your intuitiveness, doesn't it, Arjuna?
I would say that's true, yeah.
And that's not a bad gift. Not a bad gift at all. Did you want to wrap up what we were talking about, these different areas?
I think we just made it back to the top of the cycle just in time for the break. So
okay.
I think we're ready for questions.
All right. And let me ask you just a few more before we get to these questions. You've been a life coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
What have you found that most people are lacking, hence your coaching?
Well, actually, to be honest, I call myself a brilliance coach, not a life coach.
A brilliance coach, okay.
And the thing that...
That's kind of brilliant on your part.
Huh?
That's brilliant on your part.
The thing that I find most people lack is actually the right practice. You know, by a practice, I mean any sort of shift or tweak in your lifestyle that brings things back into alignment. And what most people are lacking is having an awareness of that little tweak that will get the brilliance flowing again. So that's really what I do as a coach, is I help people find just the right practice. And that's the thing about the cycle that we were talking about before the break. A practice in one part of the cycle could really help to move you through that part of the cycle. But that practice would be disastrous if you're in another part of the cycle. So it's really important. One of the most useful things about this cycle is it helps you to create a map of practice. So, for example, making promises is a practice. Making promises and keeping them, like keeping your word, is a practice. Prayer is a practice. Going to the gym is a practice. Learning from mistakes and being honest with people. Apologizing is a practice. Creative writing is a practice. These are that we can map hundreds and hundreds of practices and understand how they fit into this cycle. So the right practice in one phase of the cycle could be disastrous in another phase of the cycle.
All right, back to the calls now we go. Tallahassee, Florida. Hi, Barb. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a story, actually.
All right.
Great.
In the late 90s, I got to meet Tom Dorrance, who was one of the three men that the book The Horse Whisperer was based on.
Mm.
Tom was in his late, he might have been maybe 89. He had two hearing aids and two crutches and was bent with age and very frail. But his eyes glowed with lightning and twinkled with mischief. And he was a master of synchronicity. And I'm wondering if that's what your guest is talking about, sort of. He could understand how things would flow, and he could look at an animal, and he could tell how to help the animal, what the animal's problem was, or if the animal had a people problem. And if it was the person's problem, he could direct the person what to do without insulting the ego. He understood how to make things flow to make things come out with the positive.
Mm. Yeah, that's it.
Is that what you're talking about?
That's what we're talking about right there. You know, it's inherent in all of us, you know, this quality of brilliance. And some of the things you described, like the twinkle in his eyes, you said a mischievous look, so that's the sense of humor. These are some of the qualities that you recognize over and over again when this brilliance gets unleashed. It very often creates a humorous brightness. As you said, a lot of it is about synchronicity. So absolutely, yeah, that sounds like a prime example of brilliance.
Arjuna, I don't want to use money as a prerequisite for brilliance, but do you find that most successful CEOs of companies possess these moments of brilliance?
Not necessarily, no. In fact, I often work with CEOs of companies because they want to have more original ideas. Now, when a company is at its very beginning, like, for example, at the very beginning of Apple, when Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were in a garage, then Apple was absolutely drenched in brilliance. But the more entrenched a company gets, the more it becomes imitative, and the more that it ceases to have new original ideas. So you can see phases of a company like this in terms of brilliance. And actually, you know, when I think about it, pretty much all my one-on-one coaching now is devoted to that, is helping leaders to think out of the box, to be able to innovate and to think thoughts that have never been thought before. So it doesn't go without saying that material success is symptomatic of brilliance. You could be very materially successful in a completely imitative way, which would not be brilliant at all.
Let's go to Rock Hill, South Carolina. Barry's with us. Hey, Barry, go ahead.
Hello there, George. What a pleasure, as always. I tell you what, you just had the greatest guest on there with you, buddy. And I was just curious to know what he thinks about the idea of knows I'm stumbling and fumbling. I'm sorry.
You never stumble.
I won't stumble Thursday night. I mean, a Saturday night on 25th of August. I can tell you that.
Well, if you do, we'll have you removed.
Forcibly.
That's right. But go ahead. What's your question?
Well, I just wondered what he thought about the whole idea of not necessarily clairvoyance, but the idea of thinking ahead and, that's
all right, Barry, I'm going to move on with another call, but what about clairvoyance as it's tied into this, Arjuna?
Well, you know, the whole thing about brilliance really is it's going beyond the limits of the limits of normal thinking. It's accessing information that is not really accessible through normal logical thinking. So clairvoyance could easily be a symptom of it. But there are many symptoms. Anything which is indicative of going beyond what your mind understands, that's where brilliance is coming through. And that definitely could be an example of it, yes.
Gabriella's with us in Hawaii. Welcome to the program. Gabriella, go ahead.
A little background. I was abandoned as a toddler at an orphanage where the trash cans were kept. And I went through a series of abusive and molesting foster homes. And I didn't learn very good social skills. It's hard for me to make friends, but it's also even harder for me to keep them.
Well, I believe it. After the way you were brought up, that's not your fault, though.
And people don't seem to get it that, you know, I don't have the social skills that most normal people have. And plus, I asked you for help, and you still haven't come through, George Dory, for my electric bill.
That was sent.
When?
2 months ago.
I didn't get it.
Not to you. It went to the electric company.
Oh, it did.
Tell me they didn't apply it.
2 months ago? Okay.
Well, I want you to check, because we've got you.
The envelope to see what the bill says, so I'll do that.
Do that for us. It was like $235.
I don't know how. They seem to get tired of me, because I'm always having the panhandle, which you got to do it tomorrow to just make ends meet. And just, they don't understand what it's like not to have a family that you can turn to bail you out.
Well, what do you do about that, Arjuna? No social skills.
Yeah, well, you know,
that doesn't make it easy.
You know, I just wrote an article on my blog site, and the it's a little bit different than what our call is saying, but I just wrote this article called "The Benefit of Having a Terrible Personality," and this article was about it was actually about me, and I was talking about how I also had a pretty rough start to my life, you know? But actually, sometimes having a rough start to your life, it means because you can't rely upon the way you were raised by your family, you actually have to turn to something beyond that conditioning. So sometimes having a rough start to your life can become a blessing. But we have to learn how to access something completely beyond the personal. And that's certainly what happened for me. I don't know if it's going to work for everybody. That's certainly what happened to me. I was able to turn misfortune, the misfortune of having, you know, a very rough family life, I was able to turn that into a blessing because it became a big impetus to transcend the personality. And I think a lot of people can do that, you know, is to realize, well, my personality, my personal life is kind of, and the personality is about social skills. My personality is really doesn't work very well, so I can transcend that and access the transpersonal. So it can be that these misfortunes can actually be turned into a blessing when we access something beyond the mind.
Next up, let's go to Jennifer in Everett, Washington. I love Everett, Washington. Hi, Jen. Go ahead.
Hello. It's good to meet you, George.
You too.
I was just excited, and nice to meet you, Arjuna.
Hi, Jennifer.
Because I really enjoy this topic.
Hmm.
I've gone through a lot of crazy things in my life and have based myself to be positive and try to kill people with kindness. No matter what, I spend my days trying to just bring people out of the funk as I go through. I used to think I needed to learn massage, energy work and stuff, and I know that'll happen, but I realize that things can't always happen when you think they should. So I've spent my time realizing it's right here and now. And I guess I'm ready for the next shift. I've pulled out of bad relationships. I've pulled out of some really hard times and loss. Now, I'm really excited to maybe be able to get your book.
Mm.
And I guess, what would be a next shift?
Well, it sounds like you've said that you're ready for a breakthrough. And I would ride that one. You know, I would suggest you ride that. Now, you know, there's almost like a prayer that you can use. The thing about prayer that I like about prayer is I don't spend too much time trying to understand or define who or what it is I'm praying to, because whatever we mean by, you know, God or whatever, I don't believe I can understand anything about that. So even though I don't really understand who I'm talking to, I like to sometimes just address that mysterious source of creativity and blessing and love. And to me, the greatest prayer that you can possibly utter is the prayer, use me, I'm ready. You know, I'm available. Use me for your will, you know? And so that's when you feel like you've gotten out of some bad relationships and you've gotten over some bad luck and you're ready for a new breakthrough, that's what I suggest you do is at night, before you go to sleep. And you don't have to know who you're praying to. You don't have to know anything about it. You can just call out and say, okay, I don't know who you are. I don't know if you're male or female. I don't know if you speak English. I don't know anything. But I know that there's something beyond my mind, and I'm available. Use me for evolution. And that's what I've noticed is that is one prayer that always gets answered. You know, it may not get answered with words, but life will just give you opportunities to be of service if you call out in that way. And by the way, you said you were excited to get the book. Maybe this is a moment for me to slip in that I hope this is okay, George, but because I was coming on this show, I actually made an arrangement with Amazon exactly for Coast to Coast listeners.
Oh, tell us.
The book is actually, it's kind of, we opened the floodgates exactly for Coast to Coast listeners. So for the next 48 hours, the Kindle edition is free, F-R-E-E. If you go to Amazon.com and you download the Kindle edition, it is $0. You can have it for free. And if you want to order the paperback, it's half price. For the next 48 hours, instead of $18, it's $9. And the Audible edition, where you can hear me speak the book, that is also free when you sign up for Audible. And all that has been arranged exactly for Coast to Coast listeners to coincide with this interview.
Good for you. And you've got a number of other books out there, too, don't you?
I do. This is my ninth book, yeah.
Good for you. All right, Jennifer, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Joe,
Jennifer.
In the Bronx. Let's go to you, Joseph.
Hi, George. How are you?
Good, Joe.
Good. Yeah, I wanted to ask Arjuna, what do you think of the cosmic knowledge theory and just knowing how to tap into it or gaining access to it? I'd like to hear your opinion on that.
Well, Joseph, you know, what's clear to me is that there is a whole lot of wisdom. There's a whole ton of wisdom that is beyond what our human minds can understand. So the human mind, what I've come to realize is the human mind is a pretty limited system. Now, you probably know this, that dogs, for example, can hear sounds that we can't hear. And lots of animals, they can see. They can see colors we can't see. They can hear sounds we can't hear. Because there is a limit to what our physical senses are capable of. And in just the same way that we can't hear a whistle that a dog can hear, I would suggest that there's lots of things that we don't understand that are real. You know, now if we were to go back in history, I mean, you just have to go back 100 years, let alone 1,000 years. No one understood about atoms or electrons or even molecules or the elements. There were lots of things people didn't understand then that we understand now. But we're not at the end of evolution. There's tons of stuff that we don't understand that's still real. So I don't know exactly what we want to call it, but it's clear to me that there is so much that is real that's affecting us that we don't understand. And so I like to open myself to that. I like to open myself to that intelligence, that wisdom, that knowledge that is beyond what my mind can know. And of course, because it's beyond what my mind can know, I don't really understand what it is. I could try, but I can't really grasp its source. So I like to put myself into a disposition of being available for that to guide my life.
What would you say of the people you interviewed for your book, Radical Brilliance, was one of the most fascinating people for you?
Well, one of the most fascinating people was a man called Daniel Schmachtenberger.
Daniel Schmachtenberger?
Schmachtenberger. You should get him on the show. He's a brilliant guy.
I can't pronounce his last name. I can't put him on.
That is a little bit of a drawback, but he founded something called the Neurohacker Collective. You can find their website, neurohackercollective.com. And he invented a nootropic. A nootropic means a supplement that is primarily to enhance your brain. It's called Qualia. And Daniel Schmachtenberger, it's like talking to somebody who's a time traveler from 50 years in the future. I mean, every word that comes out of his mouth is somehow, it challenges me to understand what he's saying. He's one of the most extraordinarily brilliant people I've met. He's really, really clearly a more evolved human being.
All right, well, stay with us, Arjuna. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment. And his book is available, as he just mentioned, at Amazon.com with a discount for Coast to Coast listeners, of course. Very nice of him. Website, RadicalBrilliance.com. Ours, of course, CoastToCoastAM.com. That has his website linked up for you. So we will be right back with final calls. Don't touch your dial. Welcome back with Arjuna Arda. His book, Radical Brilliance. Arjuna, what would you say may be the single most important factor for creating this brilliance?
Well, I would say the single most important factor is wanting that, is dedicating your life to that, is realizing that chasing after money, for example, for its own sake, is hollow. I mean, you need money to be able to live, just as you need oxygen. But if you made your life only about money, it would be as shallow as making your life only about oxygen. In the same way, we need relationship and family and we need community. But if you made your life only about relationship, you would miss something deeper. So, and we need health. We need to be in good health to be able to live a good life. But if you made your life only about health, you would miss something. So I would say the most important thing is to have the discernment to want to dedicate your life to brilliance, to to have the desire, I want to make the greatest difference that I can to the greatest number of people. And if you have that desire, your life will start to become more brilliant, and then you're going to seek out ways to make your life even more brilliant.
Indeed you would. Final calls, let's go to them. Donna in North Carolina to get us started. Hi, Donna, go ahead.
Hi, Jay. I was thinking that a lot, well, in my case, I overthink things. And one night in particular, just like tonight, I woke up, coast to coast play. Sometimes I go to sleep and I woke up, and your guest, George, was talking about spontaneous combustion. And I came back in, and he was saying something, and I couldn't understand how come the authorities weren't investigating the act like they didn't care. And so I got on the phone, and believe it or not, I got through. Right, it was the last call. And I just told him, I knew it didn't have long on the air, so I kept through all the crap. I said, I got a comment and a question. And to the guest, I said, they know everything there is to know about spontaneous combustion. I said, they had to. I said, because they can't send an astronaut into space not knowing if he's going to poof out on them. Or the pilot for Air Force One not knowing if he's going to self-combust in mid-flight. I said, so they know everything that there is to know about this. I said, they're just keeping a tight lip on it. I said, but my question is, what do they put on the death certificate? And the gas just, he just went wild. He said that one coroner told the truth, that he didn't know what happened to this person. It just burst into flames. But the rest of them were pulling the answers out of their butts, you know. Because
I got to tell you, it's you're off topic. So you, that was an open line phone call. We get them all, Arjuna.
No worries.
No worries. David in Tacoma, Washington, on the, what line is he on? How do you get on the international line? How'd you pull that off, David?
Hello?
Yep, go ahead.
Man, this is, I can't even believe this. This is crazy.
You're on. You made it.
That is amazing. I was kind of surprised that I could hear you live on the phone, but I grew up listening to Art Bell through my mom, which had bad schizophrenia. And I learned later that I had bipolar disorder. And part of my dilemma is that it took me a long time of like scribbling in notebooks, making absurd like drawings and this and that, and a lot of artwork that eventually like sold. And I was lucky enough to do that while the rest of my life was shambled.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of wondering how bipolar disorder like meshes in with this. I have two young boys now. I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Are they showing and symptoms for this too?
No, it's too early. They're in my mind, they're brilliant, but I would suspect that every parent thinks that. I'm medicated now, and I feel a lot better. I'm more functional.
What did they give you for that?
Excuse me?
What did they give you for that, the medication? I'm curious.
It's Lamictal I'm on now, and sertraline. Sertraline's pretty common, I suspect, but I after years of trying to find some help to where I became functional, I've found this. I was concerned that through medication I would lose this creative part of me in this.
Would there be a trigger that would get you into this bipolar state? Would something have to happen?
Not necessarily. Like, and even after medication, I'm still able to take in this manic part of it without losing it. And that was my fear. Like,
but you used to lose it before the medication.
It would go back and forth. I would have my depressive states, of course, and then I'd have these probably 3/4 of it with these manic states where I would create like what I and others that knew me was great artwork, and I still do that. I still do that with the medication, and I'm very grateful for that.
In that state of mind. So, Arjuna, let me ask you this. So here he is diagnosed with bipolar disorder, taking medication, yet the brilliance of what he does is still shining through. How can that be?
Well, that's quite common, you know, because brilliance comes through us. So you mentioned earlier Steve Jobs. Now, Steve Jobs didn't have bipolar necessarily, but he definitely had some personal struggles.
He had a personality disorder, didn't he?
Yeah. And so, you know, I have a lot of compassion for you, David, that you go through mood swings, you know, obviously very strong. And it may well be that I know that many people feel that giving their energy to their brilliance, giving your energy to your art, can actually be a way to heal and to find something that is that transcends or goes beyond the fluctuations. I would also I have several friends who have inherited bipolar from their family, so it came from their mother or their father. And they discovered that there are lots of different ways to treat that. You know, there is the pharmaceutical chemical way, and there are other ways too, using natural supplementation. So I know that many people have, you know, there are many different ways that can be treated. And certainly I can feel in this moment, I really wish you all the best finding balance where you can give your energy to your art.
Now, your book is full of surprises. What's one of your favorite surprises?
Well,
I know you don't want to tell everybody everything, but give us a little.
Well, you caught me a little off guard there. I think, you know, one of the big surprises in the book really is how sometimes things that we think are our greatest impediment become our greatest help. So actually, for example, one of the things that I think surprises people a lot is feelings that many of us have, like regret, even guilt, remorse, shame, which we think of as very negative feelings. We discover when we unravel this brilliant cycle that those feelings are important. They are an important, healthy part of the cycle. Now, of course, if you live in shame and guilt and remorse all the time, that's toxic. But if you're unable to inhabit those kind of feelings, you lose the possibility of humility, and then the cycle shuts down. So I think that was one of the biggest surprises that I learned in doing all these interviews, is sometimes going into your most uncomfortable feelings, going into your shame, going into your darkness, can actually be the greatest catalyst to bring forth your brilliance.
You talk about prayer and devotion. Tell me about that chapter.
Yeah, well, we already touched on that a little bit already, but the beauty of, for me, the key to prayer and devotion is to not need to understand too precisely who you're praying to. You know, the more that we try and understand and conceptualize what is God, you know, then it becomes more of a mental thing. But if you can leave it unknown, there is some mysterious force. You can feel its benevolence. You can feel the humor in creation. You can feel the beauty in creation. You can feel the love in creation. You may not understand too much about where it's all coming from, but just having this sense of something bigger than you that you don't understand, that allows you to call out in longing, to say, you know, use me, use my life in your service. You may not know if that is male or female. You may not know what language it speaks. You may not know anything about it. But opening yourself up to be used by goodness, to be used by evolution, that for me is the essence of prayer. You know, and that also makes prayer very universal, because when we don't understand or need to understand too much about what we're praying to, that's where many religious currents can find common ground.
Couple more calls here, and we wrap up the night. Ron in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Ron.
George or Juna.
Hey.
This morning's broadcast. Good morning.
Hi.
This morning's broadcast is brilliant, scintillating, exceptional, and exhilarating, and I started listening to Juna a couple of hours before dawn.
Good. Well, then you're all set for brilliance today. You're all set for a brilliant day.
Tuned up.
That early.
Well, thank you. And I'm trying. I have a question and 2 points for Juna. One is I'm trying to discern your accent. Not quite sure. Canadian, British, Irish, maybe Belgian. Where is your accent from?
It's British. Yeah, I was born in England.
But he's Irish.
Irish blood, really? Irish family. But I was raised in England.
It's kind of a brilliant discernment, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So I want to, and so that was my question. My 2 points. One, you spoke about a musician whose assistant became Kateri, and I wanted to clarify and exemplify, amplify, that Kateri was not only a Native American, but she's a canonized saint of the Catholic Church, Kateri Tekeweffa.
That's right. That was
very good.
Statue in Leonard Cohen's kitchen. Yeah.
And the second point is you're talking about, you know, this brilliance coming 2 hours before dawn. Thomas Merton, Juna, do you know who Thomas Merton was?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, the famous Trappist monk, for all listeners who don't know, who wrote dozens of books, you know, kind of like you. You're on your way, your first dozen. He used to wait. And his buddy from Columbia, Edward Rice, wrote a book about him and said he used to wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning to start writing, and he would have a full day's work in before the average person was stuck in a traffic jam
right.
on the way to their job.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, there's a lot of information in the book about why these early hours before dawn are so important.
Absolutely. So with us, Ron? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you still with us? Well, I guess not.
Thanks for your comment.
Let's go to Joe in Mississippi. Joe, we got a minute for you. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing.
Just real quick. Look, you know, found this all fascinating. And just a quick question. You know, as I grew up through childhood and even into early adulthood, I always felt like one of my strongest suits or talents was just creativity. I just thrived in anything that required creative thought, thinking out of the box, and just always felt that any great success I would ever create in life would come from that creativity, would come from creating something and from original thought. As I've gotten older and with, you know, kids and mortgage, financial responsibilities, therefore financial stress and working a career that does not really involve a lot of creative thought, it's more about following processes, I feel like, you know, I've allowed my creative self, maybe even at times intentionally stifled my creative self, you know, out of a feeling that it takes away from what I really need to be doing, my responsibilities here and now. And I do have a desire to get back to feeding that creative spirit. And as your guest talked about the importance of processes throughout that cycle, some processes being important in certain parts of the cycle and detrimental in other parts. I guess what I'd be looking at is that first part of the cycle, that 12 to 3 o'clock. Would your guests recommend any certain processes, you know, within that first part of the cycle to really, you know, stimulate and feed that creative thought?
I would recommend grab the book, Radical Brilliance. It's in one of the chapters. He lays it right out there for you. Arjuna, thank you for being on the program. For Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.